Hello, everybody. This week on The Deep Dive, we attempt to talk about Life is Strange, but we actually end up talking more about Life is Strange Before the Storm. And on top of that, we talk mostly about a couple of characters. There's just so much in Life is Strange that we and our guests wanted to visit, and so much that we had feelings about that we'll be splitting it up into a series. The first two episodes will be back-to-back, and then after that, we will probably occasionally revisit the world of Life is Strange, and specifically the characters that we wanted to talk about. There just wasn't enough time to cover everything that we wanted to cover in two 45-minute episodes, so I hope you'll forgive us for that. I also want to acknowledge both studios here, because the two games were made by different studios, the first being the original Life is Strange. It's developed by Don't Nod Entertainment, published by Square Enix, directed by Raoul Babet and Michel Koch, written by Cassian Devin and Jean-Luc Canot, with a score by Jonathan Morali. I do not speak French, and those were a lot of French names, so I apologize if I butchered any of them. The second game is Life is Strange Before the Storm. It's developed by Deck 9, published by Square Enix, directed by Webb Pickersgill and Chris Floyd, written by Zach Garris, and with the score by Daughter. And as you know, it is recommended that you play the game before listening, as we are going to dive deep, and in the abyss, there be spoilers. Without further ado, let's descend. To clarify, are we talking about episode 1 or episode 2 or both today?
I think we should do both, just so we don't like artificially limit ourselves on things we want to say.
Okay, and then if it goes a bit, we can just cut it up into 1 and 2, I guess. Yeah. I enjoyed Before the Storm much better than the first game.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, Before the Storm was about loss of a parent from two different perspectives, one in which I could relate to and the other which I can relate to from the outside. Like, I've had three people in my life, or four now actually, that I know that lost a parent at a young age, one of which I was like around when it happened. So it's just kind of that peripheral kind of feeling of like, oh, I've watched this happen. So to me, it felt like I was watching something that clearly the writers had lost someone, and there must have been tons of tears while they were writing all of this, but it helped me feel closer to them, because I know a lot of times they can't talk about it or articulate exactly what it feels like, or, you know, people say you never get over the loss of a parent, and this helped me kind of see that. And then on the other side, we see Rachel, who loses a parent in the way most of us lose parents, which is just, you know, growing up and realizing that they're not superheroes, you know, realizing that they're humans and that mm-hmm. they make mistakes, and hey, they may not actually be awesome. You know, they may love you, but they may be broken and unable to care for you in the way that you want or need them to. So I just thought it was incredible. Did you, Strine, I thought you said you liked did you like the first one, or did you like Before the Storm better?
I really enjoyed the first one, obviously. It was my favorite game of that year, which I believe was 2015, 16?
Yeah, I think so.
I can't remember. But Before the Storm, the relationship between Rachel and Chloe was phenomenal. I thought it was so well done. I loved that relationship more than I loved the relationship between Max and Chloe in the first one. I felt a much deeper connection. I felt more connectivity. Mm. The second episode where they're out on the street under a street lamp, and mm-hmm. they're talking about kissing and just the way that was written, and the way you know, the voice actresses just put everything into the love that Chloe had for Rachel and the admiration that Chloe had for Rachel, and Rachel putting her guard down and, you know, not being who she was at school with Chloe was just, I thought it was phenomenally done.
Can I ask what you asked for in that scene?
No, they kissed.
Oh, yeah. But what did you ask really? For? Did you ask for the kiss?
Oh, jeez. I don't remember.
Because I asked for the bracelet and they kissed.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Okay, I definitely didn't do that. I just wanted them to be together. And
so you asked for the kiss. Okay.
I throughout the entire, I played all three episodes in like 2.5 days. Like it was enthralling, and I the whole time I was going, I'm shipping them. I just loved how, and you know, a lot of people had issues with like, okay, this is not the actress that voiced Chloe, but I do have to say
it wasn't.
That was only in the bonus episode. Was that?
Whoa!
The
original, I didn't even notice.
Right?
Yeah. Holy crap!
She did a phenomenal job of just intertwining the emotions of a very complex person.
Yes. And I hated Chloe in the first game.
It was.
I hated
tough.
Her. I thought she was manipulative and a bad friend, and I just was like not down with how she treated Max, and I thought Max was in like an abusive friendship. Mm-hmm. And then I played at the Before the Storm, and Chloe's like my favorite character in the series.
Right?
She is complex, and I love her, and I understand exactly where she's coming from. It doesn't mean that her behavior is excusable, but I understand that she's a teenager, and she's growing, and she's trying to, like, learn. And I'm 100% confident that, you know, in 5-10 years, Chloe will be fucking, you know, very mature, badass, you know, not manipulative person.
Yeah.
Because
she'll learn from that. Exactly.
She will learn. And I just, I don't know. I love her. However, while I enjoyed Chloe's realization and her discovery of a love, I did not find their relationship to be very good. Again, I thought Rachel kind of didn't really treat her very well. Which I guess is sort of understandable, but I just kept going back to that one moment in the first game where Chloe finds out that Rachel has been lying to her like this entire time, and that she was sleeping with Frank, I think.
Right, when they're in the RV, correct.
Yeah, so I just kept, during that entire thing, I could only remember that during all of this relationship that they're having, she's lying to her and sleeping with Frank.
That makes me ill that Rachel posed like this for Frank. I wrote him love letters. I can't believe she was banging Frank. Rachel straight up lied to my face. Why didn't she say anything?
Because she knew how you would react.
And she wasn't much of a friend, huh? Just another person who shits all over me. Why does everybody in my life let me down?
So it just, like, I don't know, it kind of turned me off of shipping them as hard as I could have, I think.
I find that really interesting, because it's sort of one of my biggest issues with the game, and kind of with Before the Storm, and kind of going back a little bit to the scene where you can either ask for the bracelet, the kiss, or the tattoo. It was a fantastic moment of the game, but it also really pulled me out of it. Because as soon as that question was posed, this is the only time that this happened to me when I was playing Before the Storm, is I felt like I was being tested with how much I remembered about the original game.
Ah, yeah, okay.
And they wanted to push me towards a certain outcome, you know, depending on my answer, as opposed to picking your most natural answers, you know what I mean? And you know, eventually I was able to, you know, kind of get back into it, and I ended up actually choosing the tattoo.
I was watching you play this. Yeah, I watched.
Yeah. One of the reasons I did that was I was originally going to pick the bracelet because I felt like, and this is the part that bothered me, I felt like I remembered the bracelet from the first game.
That's exactly why I picked it as well. Oh, well, maybe not entirely, but yeah, I thought, I remember seeing her wearing the bracelet, I thought, but then also asking for the kiss seemed too much, and then, I don't know.
Too much, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting to me. The reason that I chose what I chose, which was the tattoo, was because throughout that entire moment and through, you know, bits and pieces before that, Chloe's general attitude is sort of this... Well, yeah, everything's great now. We're happy now. Things are happening right now. But, you know, what does it mean later on? Is it going to last? Does it have a larger meaning than what we're feeling here in this moment? And so, like, the kiss to me is like a kiss is fleeting, you know?
Yeah.
You can kiss somebody and then hate them the next day. You know, you never really know what's going to happen. And while tattoos, yes, they can be removed, it definitely has the symbolism of more permanence.
Yeah. That's a really good point.
And I found that really interesting. And then the scene, can I just say, like, that scene itself where when she takes Rachel's arm and draws the star in it with her marker, and she's like, you know, some, you know, you've got to make this permanent. Like, it was just like the most like warm and just wonderful thing that I think I've ever seen. And I also connected with the building of their relationship a lot, especially recently, and I found it really intense.
I love that no matter what you pick, it's a good warm response.
The way they crafted the game was just, and if I remember right, Deck Nine was just a fan of the game. You know, they were
they're not the original writers.
Yeah, and you know, I very admittedly had kind of lower expectations because I wasn't.
So did I.
So like with you, I didn't really like Chloe a whole lot for a lot of the same reasons you didn't, because I thought she actually reminded me of a friend I had. So I think there was a little bit.
Yeah. I was like, it's not that I related to Max, but I recognized the manipulative behavior immediately. And I was like, no,
just hardline cavalier.
This person is a bitch. Like,
exactly. Yeah. And so I was just like, really, we're going to spin off and go to Chloe here. I was really hesitant, but I'm like, you know, I love the series and I'm going to give this a chance. I have to, like, when you're a fan of a series, you kind of do it begrudgingly, even if you don't really want to. And like we touched on, they made Chloe so complex and, you know, interwove William so well. The car scene, the one
I cried.
Yeah, I at least twice for me too. I remember.
Now wait a second, because I don't think Captain did that. I think they skipped through that.
Did they?
Because I was watching his playthrough and I was like, ooh, do I had that awkward moment of, do I warn him? Because I broke down when this scene happened and I hadn't lost a parent. So I was like, do I try to stop this from happening? Do I warn him ahead of time? And instead I just kind of like watched to make sure he would be okay after, but I didn't see it happen. Like, I don't know if I stepped away and I missed it, but did you do that in your game?
Referring to?
So in the junkyard, when you're going through and like finding stuff, she actually finds her dad's car from the accident.
I had a moment because, you know, you have the bat in your hand and you're smashing everything, and you get to this point where you get to that point where the camera sort of pans down and you just see like the lower half of Chloe, and like she looks down and I think she drops the bat, and I had this moment on the stream. I said, wait a second. I said it out loud. I said, wait a second. She's in a lot full of wrecked vehicles. And then it was such a brilliant and effective execution. It's hard for me to like put into words like how I feel, especially about stuff like that, because it's like so confusing for me. But yeah, I definitely saw it, and it was very intense. Absolutely.
I actually let out a little bit of a scream when she was hitting it. Like, I was just like, because again, like you said, the surroundings and the visceral environment that they bring you into, just, I thought the environments were so much more personal, and you really connected with Chloe and really connected with the characters. I think there was a lot less characters. You know, you had mom, dad, Chloe, I should say Rachel's mom, Rachel's dad, you know, Chloe. I'm blanking on the guy that kept showing up at really random times and being like, why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? I had a crush on Chloe. Warren, thank you.
Yeah, that's okay.
And, you know, so they really focused.
I don't know. I feel like I might disagree with that a little bit, just because in this game you also had the two brothers You also had the people who you played D&D with, you know, Steph.
Well, yeah, they had those
people that they explored. So they had, I'd say they had about the same characters. I just feel like the first game was telling a different story, you know, and the second game was telling they had a very clear focus of telling Chloe's story of loss, or also Rachel's story of her loss of a parent. Like, they had a clear focus, and everybody can connect with that, I feel like. And with Max, I feel like this episode should be called A Love Story About Before the Storm. but with Max, I felt like I couldn't really relate to Max that well. Mm-hmm. For a couple of reasons. She was pretty teen angsty judgy a little bit during some of the things she said, and I remember playing through and she would say stuff about other characters and I'd be like, wow, you're an asshole, you don't know anything about them.
Right.
And I didn't do that in high school. Let's be clear, there were people that I didn't like going through school, but I made judgments based on how they treated me or my friends or other people out of observation. It wasn't like I would say things like, oh, you know, just, I just remember thinking that the dialogue in the first one felt a little forced with mm-hmm. Max sometimes.
Forced, yep.
Yeah. And I didn't feel that at all with Before the Storm. And I squeaked when saying that because I don't want to say anything bad about it. But when you look at it in comparison, mm-hmm. I did feel that. I felt like it was, you know, and the time travel aspect was really cool.
It was.
It's not that I feel like it was a fantasy game versus a real game without time travel, because I feel like even if they did include time travel in the second game, they were telling such a powerful story, they could have made it work. But I don't know. The first one was more like action-packed. You feel like with the time travel, it wouldn't be?
I would have absolutely 100% ruined Before the Storm.
Okay.
I loved so much that they were able to remove that like fantastical element and still tell a much more powerful story, mm-hmm. in my opinion, than what the original game did. And I thought that was incredible.
Yeah. It was like reading, you know, so I had an experience. I was a huge fan of Gundam Wing when I was growing up, and I watched the entire show, which is pretty much a glorified political anime is what it is. There's very little character development, unless it's like the two main characters. But I loved the show so much that I read a whole bunch of fan fiction after. And this game feels to me like really good fan fiction that everybody loves so much that it becomes the unspoken like canon of the internet world, is kind of how I felt Before the Storm was. Because it was by fans, but they took it and just like blew it out of the park. And it made me think of that. Like, I do remember reading some fan fiction where I was like, wow, this is the embodiment of this character that they never touched on in the show. So I just kind of, it just kind of reminds me of that a little bit.
Soundtracks. Which one was better?
I think the first one. The first soundtrack might have been better, because honestly, when I think about the second game, I mm-hmm. think there's one song that stands out to me in particular, and it's the one where Rachel and Chloe are in the bedroom and they're kind of looking at the stars on the sky or on the ceiling.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And that song plays. That song is super freaking powerful. But other than that, I don't remember the music. Nothing really stands out to me as much. But I think that might not be the music's fault. I think that's just the storytelling. That the storytelling was so good that lost myself. I didn't pick out the music in particular.
I definitely feel like the... in the first game, I'm kind of the opposite. I remember one piece of music, and that was, well, I mean, it maybe depends on which ending you picked. And just to full disclosure, I have no idea what happens if you choose to sacrifice Arcadia Bay. I've never seen that ending before.
Feel free to
spoil it for me. Like, I'm not stressing about it if it gets spoiled. But yeah, like, I've never seen it. That is, I've played the game twice and I didn't choose it either time. So the song that plays throughout like the ending sequence of the game,
that song is great.
During the funeral, it's just, that's what got to me. But with Before the Storm, every single music cue I thought was just like the most powerful. Ooh. Like, just absolutely perfect. And I haven't really, you know, dove into the soundtrack enough to like, you know, name specific songs or specific moments. But yeah, absolutely every single music cue in Before the Storm I thought was perfect, and I would just like sit back, especially when it had those times where like you could, you know, choose B to like progress the game basically. Yeah. I would just sit back and just melt into it.
Yeah.
And it was perfect. And the first game didn't do that for me as far as the soundtrack goes. It was good. You know, there was no problems with it. It wasn't distracting, which I mean to me is really all you can ask for. But
right.
Yeah, it didn't really suck me in like the second game did as far as the music goes.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, I've always been on record as saying the first game's soundtrack was extremely powerful to me. Especially now the one where you choose to sacrifice Arcadia. Wait.
Bay versus Bay.
I know, Bay versus Bay. Thing. I'm trying to think. The one where it's the funeral one. That song was extremely powerful, but it was almost every ending.
That's the Bay.
That was the song.
You sacrifice Chloe to save all of the town.
Yeah. Correct, yes.
Mm-hmm. Which is also what I picked.
Yeah, and that song was extremely powerful. A lot of the songs are still. I downloaded the soundtrack and you know, listened to it, and I can still go and sit back in my memories and just enjoy, you know, what that game, you know, brought. I'm with you, Peebs, where Before the Storm, the storytelling was just so good, and I was so entrenched in everything. The music was just, you know how you kind of like sometimes will be focused on work and you just have music playing.
Stuff in the background.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what it was for me. The Stars one, though, that one got me. I remember that one.
Do you think, though, that might be because there was, dare I say it, stronger writing in Before the Storm? So the music took a back seat, whereas in the first game, the writing might not have been as strong. So the music carried it a little bit, and that's why you remember it.
That's a thinker.
Yeah.
I would say, I mean, I guess I already did say, I have to say yes to it because of how I explained it, is that the writing.
Well, no,
is
you don't have to. I mean, it's just
I think, though, that would be my answer, though, is, is the writing, because there's definitely a couple moments in the first episode, or sorry, the first game, where I was just like, oof. Like, you know, Frank and his
God, don't get me started on Frank. I love him so much.
Frank and his beans, you know, a lot of stuff, they were creative, and so it's nothing to take away from the first one's writing, but I think the best way I can explain it is that the first one used emotion with music, whereas Before the Storm used words as their music, in the sense.
Yeah, the dialogue was so good in Before the Storm. Can we just talk for a minute about David?
Oh my God.
What would you like to talk about? Where would you like to start?
I would like to start by saying, I hope my mother never listens to this podcast. Because there was a specific scene in Before the Storm where I just started crying. Oh boy, it's coming up. All right, hold on. Breathe. Okay, where they're at the car and she's like, I feel like you're choosing him over me, but you're supposed to choose me.
Joyce, you can't start apologizing now. This will only encourage her.
That's enough out of you, David. We need to start treating each other better. And that means all of us. We need a new beginning. A new chapter. One that will involve the three of us together.
Well, what does that mean?
We both agree that the best thing for everyone at this stage is for me to move in.
No fucking way!
Chloe, after everything that's happened, I'm at a loss. I need help.
Exactly. We need a firmer hand steering this ship.
Talk to me, Chloe. Tell me what you're feeling.
You're trying. I get it. I swear I do. And I've been making it harder for you. But this is not the answer.
It's the only answer I have, Chloe.
In a million years, I never thought you'd choose David over me. I'm sorry I took that for granted.
She says exactly what I remember thinking. Like, you have chosen the easier route with my stepdad than what you should be doing, which is protecting your children. And I remember having that thought, and that I just started crying when this happened in this game. And I thought to myself, like, holy shit, the writers, they've all experienced this. Like, everything in this game is real.
Right.
And I really appreciate that they had the courage to be that vulnerable with each other while they were writing this, because I can't imagine that it was easy. But yeah, and I found it interesting because, I don't hate my stepdad. And as I'm older now, obviously things are unexcusable, but I feel the same way about David. You know, I feel like he's a jerk, and I feel like his approach is inexcusable, but I also understand where he's coming from. And I had a moment where, as an adult, I found out that my mother was dating my stepdad after my dad and her broke up, and they were together for quite a while. And then my dad tried to get my mom back. And he basically, I didn't even know this, but my dad was not around during the first like 2 years of my life. And I just had no idea. I didn't ask where he was, like, and I didn't know this until I was an adult and I found this out later. But so basically my dad came back to my mom and was like, I want to try again. Like, I want to, you know, like, we got to make this work. We have kids together. How about we go to Japan and just get a fresh start? That's when they moved to Japan together, and my mom left my now stepdad to go be with my dad. I didn't know any of this.
Wow.
Growing up with my stepdad. So when we came, we left Japan because my parents were having I don't even know if I'm going to be able to use any of this in the podcast. I hope I'm brave enough. But so like we come back from Japan because they're breaking up, right? And then my stepdad and my mom get hooked up, and I just, you know, now looking at it as an adult, realizing that my stepdad was so brokenhearted over this. He like quit his job and drove all the way across the country on a motorcycle and wrote my mom a letter begging her not to go and do this stuff. And I'm like, Mom, why wouldn't you tell me this as a teenager? It would make his frustration at us make sense. You know, like, of course you would be upset. And every time you looked at me, you would be reminded that the girl that you loved with all of your heart took off and had kids with another guy. Like, of course you're going to have some rage at his kids. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember a specific instance where I was laughing and talking to my dad on the phone, and he came into the room, ripped the cord of the phone out of the wall because I was laughing with my dad. And I just could not wrap my brain around it at the time. I get it now. You know, right. Like, I fucking get it now. And I don't know, but I look at David in that way. Like, some of the stuff that you're doing is unacceptable, but also I get that guys are not taught to talk about things or to properly handle their emotion in general. I feel like society is not good on men in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so what are you supposed to do when you have all of these feelings and no avenue? You know, I get it that you lash out in weird ways, but I just remember hating him for a very long time. And then when I found that information out, it just, everything clicked. And then it was overwhelming because I didn't feel like I could hate him anymore, you know? And I felt that way with David.
Well, I mean,
sorry.
You're fine.
I mean, it definitely provides, you know, provides some perspective on it, because it was very hard for me to not feel anything other than anger towards David, mm-hmm. especially because like it just throws you right into that shit like immediately the first scene that you encounter David, he is a piece of shit. He's an asshole for like no reason whatsoever. Yeah. Like, all we want to do is get in the car and go to school.
Through
his dialogue and his actions, he automatically thinks that we are just going to be like, you know, the rudest person on earth. And it was just so like.
But you got to think, all he hears is the woman he loves talking about how stressed she is about her daughter and how her daughter's lashing out. And, you know, so part of where he's coming from is trying to protect Joyce. And I know that none of what he's doing is excusable, but depending on how you played the game, Chloe doesn't necessarily make it easy either, you know?
It's true.
I mean, I played it.
He starts it, though.
He does start it. And he's in the wrong. Like, he is in the wrong. You cannot just come into a family and fix everything
dictate.
Yeah, there's a specific line he says that stuck with me where he was like, it's also in the car scene where he says, we feel it's best if I move in and you'll see what a stable family life can
be
like.
Yeah, all that
I just remember thinking, you fucker. Mm-hmm. Like, she had a stable life before her dad died. Hello? Like, how can you say such an insensitive thing? Like, it's not like, you know, like, have some fucking compassion. And all of this, I feel like, could have been avoided if we had a better view on mental health. And Joyce had been like, Chloe, we're going to take you to see somebody. But actually, I think she does now. I misspoke. I'm wrong. She does, because Chloe specifically says, my therapist would say this. So she is seeing somebody. It's just not very helpful. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. Oh, man. Or if they had maybe seen somebody together also separately about, maybe just read a fucking book about getting together in a new relationship after your kids lost a parent and how they're going to feel about it and the proper way to do things. Because the proper way to do things is not fucking put all their items out in the car and search them. And then in that same conversation, be like, he's moving in. Like, what?
Well, I mean, yeah. And then you go through how you see David in the first episode or the first game. And it's the same thing, Cap, where you just, I despised David, and I did everything I could. I get really emotional in these games, and I get really invested in all the characters, and I wanted there to be, for lack of a better term, backlash towards David, and then, but
we all want justice.
Yeah, injustice, but he, you know, like you said, started it, and. You know, I always try to look for compassion on everybody and be like, they have to have a compassionate side somewhere, but how are they showing it and how they're relating it? And the writing for David was really well done that way. Like the line you said, Peebs, where he said, we're going to make a stable family. It's like, it's these really strong words that are used. Because like you said, he did. William was a great father the way they portrayed him. He was great. He was loving. And he wanted to do everything. Now Chloe has to learn from a guy who is, you know, suffocating her freedom. And so to watch that juxtaposition of what Chloe has to learn, you know, made me choose those choices for how she reacted to David. Because I put myself in her shoes and said, if I am a teenager at this point, going from a very stable to a guy who loved Joyce, and you could just see had doting eyes for her, to David, who seems so nefarious may be too strong of a word, but close to that, about how he went about raising a child and how he went about how he thought it was to raise a family. So when I would play Chloe, that's kind of where I went with David, is because I was just so, because I kind of had that a little bit because of my mom and dad separating when I was 5 and having that feeling towards my mom. And so to kind of extrapolate that out to these characters. And that's what's the beauty of these games. And this is why you get such visual responses, is because of the reality of everything. And
because
just,
it's real.
So, you know, like, Peebs, you have a way with David, and I have a feeling about how David felt for me. And, you know, you can do that because it's like how a comedian works. They want to be relevant and all of that. And that's what these games do. And it's a beautiful thing. And I love it.
I think, what I find to be a little bit of a, I guess, like a different reaction as far as the first game goes is I didn't necessarily dislike David ever. Like, you have like this initial, like, on the surface reaction, you know, throughout some of the things that happen, and you're just like, you know, why are you such an asshole? But also David was presented with such mystery in the first game you know, like you're trying to figure him out. And in the and that's sort of why I was never immediately like, oh, this is a character that I hate, you know, just because of, you know, because of this or that. Like, you want to know why. Whereas in Before the Storm, he was just immediately this like presumptuous, like rude, you have no idea how to live your life, so I'm going to teach you how to, you know, like, oh. It's just so, and and I had a much more intense reaction to him in the second game than I did in the first. In the first game, I was like, you know, why is he doing the things that he's doing? You know, let's find out about this. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe he has reasons, you know, reasons that make sense. And felt like he overall just was presented as somebody with better intentions, even from the start, as opposed to Before the Storm, where it was just like this constant, like, just constantly terrible interactions. And then you get to the scene where, you know, David starts talking about his past a little bit and you're like, oh, I'm suddenly supposed to feel better for you now.
Yeah.
Like this excuses you being a total piece of shit and, yeah. you know, making my mother feel like she doesn't have a voice anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, excuse me. No, like, get out of here. However, I go through such like a roller coaster thinking about yep. David because, you know, because of literally what I just said, like doing the most terrible thing, which is making someone feel like they don't have a say in how their life should be run. That is one of the most terrible things you can do to somebody.
Yeah.
But I also found myself in the responses that I chose to Joyce and to David in Before the Storm, sort of placating them, or at least saying what I thought Joyce would want to hear, which is also not really productive. And I go back and forth like I feel gross about some of the things that I did, but at the same time, it was like, I just want to make things better for my mother.
Situation, yeah.
Yeah, I'm fascinated mm-hmm. by that. So you chose to give her what she wanted because it'd be easier for her or easier for
yes.
you. Okay, yeah, I also did the same thing. I found myself choosing answers or responses or being nice to David because I kept saying to myself, it's just 4 years. Then you're out of high school, you can leave, and mm-hmm. it's fine. Like, and everybody's happy. And he's unreasonable and ridiculous, but you can do it and it'll make Joyce happy. And I do feel like what you said, Stren, about coming from her perspective of having a great dad and a guy who loved Joyce and watching her be sad, because Joyce pre-loss of her husband is completely different from after. And I feel like Chloe is losing two parents here. She's losing her dad physically right. and then also watching her mom become a different person. And then her mom chooses somebody who Chloe thinks is not worthy of her. But
and that's but a whole discussion all
Joyce.
Itself.
Yeah, that's a whole discussion, but it's yeah. all Joyce has room and for now that she's lost her husband. It's mm-hmm. all she can do right now. So it's like it's a whole other complex issue of, you know, yeah, I don't think this person is good for you in this relationship, but at some point you have to take a step back and go, A, it's her life and it's what she wants, but mm-hmm. also B, it might be all she has in her after the loss of the love of her life, you know? And I think Joyce says a couple of lines like, David is a good man. Not once is she like over the moon about him. I don't right. think personally, I take it as, it is hard to raise a kid alone. It is hard to lose a partner. It is hard and it's hard. And she just got too tired and was like, this is comfortable. This is nice. And
comfortable.
This is okay.
That's the, yeah. that's a good word.
This eases my pain.
The only moment where they really show her is like truly happy is when you're not even there.
Yeah.
When you haven't come home for days, you know, and
that hurts so much.
Chloe ends up like sneaking in her window I don't remember exactly what the purpose of that was. I think maybe it was to get the tools to fix
yeah.
the truck.
I think that's what it was for. Yeah.
And Chloe starts to go downstairs and, you know, they don't know that she's there. And so she just sits down on the stairs and Joyce and David are just in the kitchen, like making breakfast and like having a good time together and, you know, being cute and flirty and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting to me that is really the only time that you actually see them happy is when Chloe is technically just like removed from the situation.
Do you think, I mean, that's a very difficult thing to think about, but also, you know, when parents sometimes, when a couple loses a child, they can't stay together because they're constantly reminded of that loss So I wonder if it's the same. I've never considered this before, but I wonder how difficult it is to lose your partner and then look at your kid every day.
Oh.
And then be like, yep.
Fuck.
Yeah. I have never considered that before, wow. But good God.
God,
you know,
if you already need some onions, I got some over here. Jesus.
I know, like, and it's terrible to say this, but maybe Joyce is happier.
Well, I mean,
momentarily, at least, when she is not constantly reminded of.
Well, you have to think about it this way. Remember that, and this goes back to an addiction talk, but a lot of parents of people who are addicted, and obviously they're not, but the way it works is the parent usually ends up becoming codependent. They're always thinking about the kid. They're always wondering where they're at. Mm-hmm. And you see in the text messages that Joyce is sending her, where are you? Why are you not home? I'm worried. Like, constant texts. Yeah. But it's kind of the same thing. So if they're like, I believe that they don't know where Chloe is at this point because of the coming into the window. But I wonder if Joyce is just, I'm just going to forget I have David here out of sight, out of mind. I wonder if she just reached that point.
What else can you do?
Yeah, holy shit.
We talk about there's this mental exhaustion that people go through when they're constantly worried about somebody. And I think there's just times where you just have to step back and, you know, and it's unfortunate that Chloe saw this, but it may have just been that time for, Joyce and for having David there. That was the interaction. He was, David was Joyce's distraction, mm-hmm. and allowed her to just forget for a little bit. And unfortunately for Chloe may not understand, and it's a replacement issue, and she also could have felt replaced.
Oh yeah.
You know,
or just like reminded that her dad is no longer here. Like, it's right in your face when your mom is picking somebody new. You're like, oh, okay, but I'm still grieving the loss of my dad. Why aren't you? Like, why are you right. just so easy, quick to replace? And it's like, this is why I feel like if we could just sit down and like talk and understand, like if you could say to a 16-year-old or 17-year-old, like, your mom is a person, like a human, not a superhero, because that's where part of this problem comes into play, where you're like, my parent is perfect. There's nothing wrong with them. You know, they do everything right all the time. If there's a disconnect, you don't realize that your parent just lost the love of their life, and like, it's going to be a completely different experience than you losing a parent. Both are very terrible, but you're going to have a different reaction to things of this loss. And then on top of that, everybody reacts differently to loss as well. So then you've got like, it's just multi-layers. And I feel like if somebody had been able to sit Chloe down and say, but Chloe goes through some of that too. She thinks about that and how hard it is for Joyce. But I feel like if you were just able to sit back and go, okay, Joyce is complex and a human, and she's doing this to survive because she can't go another day in an empty bed where all of William's stuff is hanging up, you know? And Chloe gets mad, like, you know, you're putting away dad's stuff. You're trying to get rid of him. You're trying to remove him. And it's like, no, every day she wakes up and forgets that he's dead, you know, like her morning, which, right? Like, she wakes up in the morning and she's in bed and it's like, rolls over. Oh yeah, my fucking husband is dead.
It's such an intense like outpouring of anger, like seeing like the pictures of William being put away or yeah. you know, like turned face down and shit like that. I was just yelling about this like out loud multiple times while I was playing the game. Like, you don't do that. Like, you can't just erase the fact that this person existed. But I never really considered, you know, the fact that, like, you know, maybe she's doing it because she has to, just to survive, instead of what I had initially interpreted that as, which was, oh, it's time to move on because I have David now.
I definitely took it the reverse, but only because the way we see Joyce portrayed when William is alive, like, and I think it's only a voice clip that we hear from her, but she's like laughing. She's like a completely different person than after. And I see in the original game, the first game, this rundown woman trying to make every, you know, ends meet and all this stuff. And she's a completely different person. So I just imagine getting up in the morning and going, I'm never getting that back. Like, I had the love of my life. How lucky would I be to get that again? It's not happening. So would I want a constant reminder that I'm going to forever settle or never have that level of joy again? No. So yeah, that's kind of where I saw. Joyce is one of my favorite characters in that game, but
oh my God, yeah.
Yeah, I definitely took that as surviving. Like, she just has to do it to survive. I like this because I feel like the steep dive has become like people. We just pick a person and we like dive about that person a little bit, which is pretty cool. It's definitely made me realize we're going to need a lot more time.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. Please stay tuned for part two of our conversation about Life is Strange and Life is Strange Before the Storm with Pumpkinberry, myself, and our special guest, Stren, who you can find at twitch.tv/Strenus83. That's STRENUUS83.
The Deep Dive Cast is brought to you by PBTV, and you can find us at deepdivecast.com, as well as on Twitter and Instagram at deepdivecast. And if you like what you hear, consider rating and reviewing The Deep Dive on iTunes. And if you'd like to, you can also support the show by visiting us on Patreon at Pumpkinberry. Patrons receive various perks like monthly black and white wallpapers, early access to episodes, bonus episode content, and of course, the knowledge that you directly are keeping The Deep Dive afloat. That pun never gets old. We'd also like to invite you to join us every Monday morning at 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, where we air the episodes live and have a deep dive session with the listeners right there in chat. Come join in on the conversation at twitch.tv/pumpkinberry. See you next time, divers. The Deep Dive podcast is proudly part of the Geek Generation Network. For more podcasts about your favorite geeky things like games or your favorite shows, browse our whole library at thegeekgeneration.com.